It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
Right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all here. And Captain Mike, good to see you.
Sean, good to see you this morning.
There's a lot to do right now. This is the time of year, well, most time of year, we get split woods or water because the fishing reports have come in, like trout fishing that they – Bobby earlier in the week, trout moves shallow.
Yeah.
Just like 2 days of warm weather, and he's catching them on the flats. Captain Bobby Ariscotto was on trout. Yeah.
And we hadn't talked. We hadn't talked this morning. We just got here and got going. I mean, this past weekend I went up to the camp, went bass fishing. Caught about 150 bass by myself.
Jeez Louise, let me see your thumb.
My God. I quit doing that. I grab them by the gills now, Sean. Right. Because I learned a lesson. You do that with your thumb, you won't have a thumb at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So
I've done that too many
times.
Fish
are eating it up right now. I can tell you that.
So there's a lot to talk about in that front. But, of course, our minds are thinking turkeys. A lot of us zoned in on that, what's coming up later on this month. And we are going to talk turkeys today, and a real special guest. I'm really, really excited to get this man on the show. So many questions. I'm a big fan of his Turkey Tuesdays. A lot of people know about on social media. And anytime I get a chance to hear him talk, I'm always tuned in. Lucky enough today, Dr. Mike Chamberlain from the University of Georgia, professor of wildlife ecology and management, and the turkey doc himself, joining us on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Thanks for your time.
Oh, no problem, guys. Good to be with you.
Hey, good to have you here as well. And so real quickly too, because people, I mean, you've got two identities, right? I mean, you're Mike Chamberlain, your husband, father, Mike Chamberlain, but in the social media world, you're the turkey doc.
Yeah, for better or for worse. I'm just a regular guy, man. I'm a father, I'm a hunter, I'm a fisherman. I'm just a guy working like everybody else. I just happen to do something that at least this time of year is kind of in the public eye. I study wild turkeys and I do research and have students that do a lot of work with me. And turkeys are a hot topic this time of year, obviously.
I got to ask you this because I have a whole slew of questions, but my opening question, I'm going to throw this in. Thought about this. So doing what you do, being a hunter, being like us, but your job is studying wild turkeys. Does that make you more or less or no change keyed in on turkeys? The fact that you study them all year, has it diminished your love for turkey hunting or your desire, or has it made it more? Or is it no change? What's your theory?
No, it just changes your lens a little bit. I think about turkeys every day, all year. So I don't really get keyed in on them per se. And, you know, at this time of year, my mind has been wrapped around this bird all year. So it really doesn't change my passion for them, but it does change the lens at which I look through them. In other words, when I'm hunting birds, I think differently than I used to. And I pay attention to things that I probably didn't used to, and I think more importantly, I appreciate every opportunity that I have to get on a bird and harvest a bird, because I realize through my work how truly special it is to be able to do that and have that experience. That's probably the one thing that has changed because of my job.
I'll tell you what, I want to hunt with them because I'd say, hey, Dr. Chamberlain, what are they going to do next?
Yeah. He's hung up out there. What do we do now?
I have no clue. I have no idea. No idea at all, man. I'm guessing just like everybody else.
I know there's a special call. What is it? Do it right now so he'll stop staying out there 75 yards. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you don't have any trips.
I was going to say, you're asking the wrong guy because they hang up on me all the time.
See, that doesn't make me feel better. A man with this experience studying them and they still hung up on him.
You got to study him more, I think, Mike. You haven't succeeded at your job.
Let's talk about turkeys overall, and then we can, and if we have time at the end, we'll talk about individual turkey stories because I love to do it. But so turkeys overall, let's talk about the point of agreement, I'd say in the Southeast, and maybe you can fill me in if it's elsewhere in the country, but we got a problem with turkey populations. I mean, we got from 1990s, you can tell me actual dates, but I'm thinking back to my hunts over the years from the 90s, maybe 2000s and on. Anecdotally, I've seen the drop in turkey population in a lot of places, and people I hunt with and my friends have said the same thing. Has there been, do you have numbers or percentages of decline in the Southeast or elsewhere?
Yeah, if you look across the Southeast and really the Eastern United States in general, and even some Midwestern states, there's clear evidence that populations have declined. Not only has estimated abundance declined, which is really hard to get at. States do it differently, but we've seen significant declines in production, and the way we measure that is through poults observed per hen in the summer. Those numbers have declined precipitously. For instance, in Alabama, it's declined from a little over 2.1 poults per hen down to about 1.6 just in the past decade. And that may not seem like a significant decline, but it is. When you go back the previous decade, it was over 3. So we've seen, you know, a pretty sharp drop in production, which means we're producing fewer turkeys. At the same time, you've seen across state either harvest that has increased and then stabilized and started to decline, or you've seen states that have seen pretty sharp declines. The numbers I was looking at for Alabama recently, if you look at estimated harvest, which I know there's a lot of debate about, you know, what the harvest numbers actually mean in a lot of states, but if you look at the estimated harvest in Alabama, it's declined by about 52-53% over the past, say, 15 or 20 years. So
that's huge.
Those trends are pretty clear in every state, frankly. I mean, some, as you can imagine, are more obvious than others. But the bottom line is the consensus across all states in the region, when you talk to their agencies, to the state turkey coordinators and researchers, there's clear consensus that something is amiss.
So, but do we know what this something is?
And I also want to come back to just a quick question before we go into that. You talk about the poults per hen, and that's an averaged number, right, Dr. Chamberlain? Okay. So we observed X number of hens; they had this many poults. Let's attribute. So one could have 6, and one could have 0, right? Or one could have 4, and one could have 2.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. Those numbers are averaged across all observations within a state.
Okay, so there's that. So you said we were at one point in the 3s, but had been recently over 2. What's the? I may not use the right scientific term. What's the break-even point? I mean, how many to keep a population stable? Is there a number that you can give us on that? How many poults per hen you need?
We really don't know, honestly. That's a really good question, and it's one that is hotly kind of debated even in the turkey research world. We just don't know. What we used to think, and this is a bit kind of scary to me, but we used to think that 3 poults per hen was about right. And fast forward about a decade ago, we thought about 2 poults per hen would be about okay. And now we're seeing well below that. And if you think about it, let's just use Alabama data, for instance. So 1.6 poults per hen on average per year, that would mean that on average, each hen is producing 1.6 poults. So given a 50-50 sex ratio, right? Mm-hmm. So given that half would be males and half would be females, which we know is actually not true. They tend to be biased towards males. But let's just say 50-50. She's not even replacing herself on average with a hen each year. So she has to live a long time to be able to not only replace herself, but also replace herself multiple times, and that's how you would expand and grow a population. So if you kind of think about it just from a simple math perspective, the female part of our population, for sure, is declining because of the production numbers that we're seeing.
Mm-hmm. Because she, yes, and she also got to replace herself. It may take, like you're saying, multiple years to do that. And she got to replace the gobblers who aren't going to replace themselves at the same time.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. I mean, at that 1.6 number, it takes a couple of years for her to replace herself with another hen, and to replace, toms in the population. So that's why we kind of thought a decade ago or so, we thought, well, maybe two poults per hen is good. You know, maybe that's right, because she would on average produce a male and a female each year, and that would get it done. And we're below that, and most states are below that, honestly, and some have been for quite some time.
Is okay. So you look at that number. Eventually, if left at, and I don't know if this is, I'm sure there's a statistical run for this, if it stayed at 1.6 and never got any better, eventually do you not have, eventually you wouldn't have turkeys, right?
Well,
like in a vacuum, in a vacuum in a study, or you know, at a certain point, if you can't replace yourself, it may not happen, but wouldn't eventually, if you ran it out to 100 years or something, would it?
Well, what you'd see is, turkey populations are like all other critters. I mean, you'll see some years that are better than others,
mm-hmm.
And you'll see a little uptick, and that's what the poult per hen data look like. If you look across the Southeast for like the last 25 years, the states that have that data for that long, you see that it declines long term, but some years were a little better, and so you got a little bump in numbers, and then the next year may have been not as good. So you kind of see these little ebbs and flows, but the picture from a broad perspective is a declining trend. You look at one year versus the next, and you may say, well, this year was better than last. Yes, that may be true, but long term, the picture shows pretty clearly that we've seen declines.
So why? What is causing the decline? Is it from hunting pressure? Is it from predators? All of the above? Because we don't shoot hens. I mean, nobody shoots hens, so they should multiply. You know, it's kind of like, well, we do shoot does, but we don't shoot near as many does as we do bucks most of the time. So what's causing this?
There is not a smoking gun, and this is one of the most frequently asked questions that at least I get, and I'm sure every state biologist gets it. You know, guys, we want to put a finger on one thing, and that's just not the way this story has unfolded. I mean, if you look across the Southeast and you get up in a plane and just fly across your state, and you look what's below that plane, you're going to see that the landscape that this bird lives on doesn't look like it did 20 years ago. You've seen changes in forest management. You've seen changes in land ownership, increased fragmentation, reduced use of prescribed fire, reductions in hardwood forests. So we know we have declining habitat quality at a broad scale, not, on some person's property, they may be doing a really good job, but at a broader scale, the habitat issues are obvious. We've got predator communities that are more diverse than they have ever been, meaning we have
Yes.
a lot of these critters out there that eat nests and eat adults. And we've got disease issues that we really don't understand. We know we lose turkeys to disease every year, but we don't know what it means at a population level. And then you factor in the obvious that we hunt this bird, during their breeding season, and you kind of wrap all that together, and none of that is the cause. It's just this bird has a lot of things that are kind of stacked against it, some of which are more problematic than others, and we really don't know the magnitude of effect of each one of those things, but all of those things that I just mentioned are things that managers concern themselves with, because we know that all of those things affect turkeys in some way.
Right, coming right back.
When we come back from the break, I've got something I want to say.
All right, very good. We'll ask these questions because we got the turkey doc, Mike Chamberlain, our guest right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Remember, streaming online, fmtalk1065.com. Plus, you can check the podcast when it posts later on this morning through our podcast site or iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, any of those places. Our guest, real treat, Dr. Mike Chamberlain, the Turkey Doc, as most of us know him on social media. Our guest, talk about turkey populations and what's been going on. If you just joined us, we kind of looked at like the last 25 years, right, Dr. Chamberlain, kind of where this decline has been over a couple decades.
Yeah, absolutely.
And one quick question, and then I'll get into another question. If we're looking for you on Facebook or Instagram, how can we find you?
Yeah, on Facebook, you can just type in my name, just type in Michael Chamberlain, and you'll come to my page. On Instagram or Twitter, my handle is Wild Turkey Doc. It's just Wild Turkey, D-O-C. It's all one word. And either of those platforms, you'll see the page. And if you follow me, you'll get posts every Tuesday, which is the Turkey Tuesday post that I put out. Hopefully they're informative.
I love them. It's like my favorite thing.
And we'll ask you again for the end of the show so everybody knows how to get a hold to you. But my question before we went to the break is, you know, just from my observation, I'm just a regular turkey hunter, but I've got friends that have lots of money, and they've got game fences, and, you know, some of them 2,000 acres or some a little less, some more. But they have managers that every day they got traps out. They catching coons, they catching possums, skunks, bobcats, coyotes, you name it, they catching it. And from my observation, they've got more turkeys than you can shake a stick at. Now, they have got the turkeys because they don't have the predators to come in and break the nest up. And they don't have the predators to catch the little broods. So that's my observation. So it looks like predator control is a big part of helping the turkey population in a controlled environment. Am I right?
It can be, yeah. Yeah, it can be. Predator management, you know, the science has shown that it can be effective at increasing nest success for ground nesting birds and improving, like, fledgling, which would be poult survival. And so, yeah, I mean, and I get this question a lot, and my response is always the same. If you are motivated to trap and you do it within the legal confines of your state agency's regulations, go for it. Enjoy it. Enjoy the exercise that is trapping, because it is a rewarding pursuit. Just be realistic in your expectations, because like what you just noted, if you're kind of half-heartedly doing it, then you should expect half-hearted results. If you are intensively doing it and you're repeatedly doing it from year to year and you're targeting a wide range of predator species, not just say raccoons or not just coyotes or whatever, then you may see some good results from it on your property. Just understand that the science has also shown that in the absence of anything else, in other words, if you only trap and you don't do anything habitat related, you just try to remove predators, that your results are going to be less significant than if you did do other things. So I kind of say to people, yeah, go for it. Just understand that trapping is one of the tools we have available to us, and be realistic in your expectations and go enjoy it.
And trapping 100 acres is not the same as trapping 2,000 acres either. You know, if you're able to trap a bigger piece of property, you're going to have, should have, a little more effect on your turkeys. So somebody's got 100 acres or 80 acres, 40 acres, I mean, it's not going to do much good to go trap a few coons off of it.
Yeah, but if you got a couple of neighbors that would let you, you know, have access to their land, or they're doing, you know, they're also doing some management activities, you know, I encourage people, kind of think outside your own property if you can, and if you can enlarge your footprint, regardless of what you're doing, whether it's your trapping, whether it's your habitat management, whatever it is, try to make your footprint as large as possible. And if you do, then your expectations can get a little bit bigger, you know?
I want to get into, and because there's things that we talk, you talk about, these are all different tools that habitat management by trapping or brood cover, nesting cover, those kind of things. But there's a question here that's come up and part of this discussion, and it's not about what we can do to our land. It's what we might not do with the land. And I think that's one of the more interesting conversations that come up out there as we look at these declining turkey populations. You mentioned we hunt turkeys during their breeding season. So they're actively breeding. We're hunting actually as it gets ramped up and through the breeding season. What effects are we having? Or what have studies shown? What are we doing?
Well, there's some knowns and there's some unknowns. The knowns that are pretty clear looking at the science is that hunting pressure results in reduced gobbling activity. That as you hunt this bird more and put more pressure on it, they respond by reducing their gobbling activity. And that's been shown since the 1980s. And it makes sense. And we all see it with our own eyes, particularly if you hunt public land that gets a lot of pressure. That part, the science pretty clearly shows that this bird responds to pressure and reduces gobbling activity. What we don't know is how the removal of toms and just kind of the activity of us being out there during this period influences their reproduction. We that's something we're working desperately to try to understand now. If you look at work on other animals that are like turkeys, that use a mating system like wild turkeys do, there is science clearly showing that the removal of males, depending on when it occurs, can have influences on reproduction. But we're trying to get those answers for turkeys right now. And it's not just Mike that's trying to get those answers. There's work going on all over the United States that's trying to get at that question of, okay, logically, if you're hunting an animal during their breeding season and you're removing breeding animals from the landscape, you would logically conclude that there would be some effect. Maybe it's very minor. Maybe it's not minor. We just don't know, and that's what we're trying to get answers to now.
But part of this is, yes, I mean, if you take males and females out, or one or the other, you get less chances. But in some of the things I've heard you talk about in the past fascinate me and really opened my eyes, because I'd be frank with you, my whole life hunting turkeys and never thought about when I killed the dominant gobbler. I guess I just figured that afternoon they'd all get back together and whatever other gobbler would go to, you know, breeding the hens. And that's not exactly how it works. Can you describe that process? Like, okay, we get great morning, we roll old big boy. We're back there riding them around, taking pictures, cutting the breast out, getting ready for dinner. What's going on with the rest of those turkeys, those gobblers?
Yeah, so work back in the 1970s actually answered this question, and it just didn't get out in press, I guess. But there was work done in the 1970s by a faculty member that was at Auburn University actually at the time, and he clearly demonstrated that what happens in this bird is you have a dominant bird that has high testosterone levels, and the toms around him have varying levels of testosterone. Some, so we'll just call it moderate. I'm just doing this for sake of discussion. So you got a breeding tom that's the dominant guy, and he's got a lot, his testosterone is high. You've got his buddy that's standing beside him that has kind of moderate levels of testosterone. And then you got this third guy standing there who has very, very low levels of testosterone. So low that he could not ramp up and actually successfully breed with a hen. He may try, but he's not capable of fertilizing a clutch.
Physically, that Tom cannot breed. It doesn't have the wherewithal at that point to breed.
That's right. That's right. So, and that work also showed that when you remove that dominant bird, the other birds around him don't just suddenly today see a dramatic increase in testosterone. It takes time, and sometimes it doesn't happen. Like, in the short term, it think days here. It just doesn't happen. So there's a lot to this we don't understand because we don't perceive their world like they do. But the bottom line is there was work decades ago that showed this, that it's not as simple as just the next guy stepping up. And that's how birds that have dominance hierarchies or pecking orders, that's how they function. That turkeys are not unique in this aspect of their life. This is what we've known this for other species as well, that those pecking orders dictate more than just who's dominant. They also dictate who's breeding, and the other birds that are there may or may not be capable of breeding even when we remove that dominant bird.
Leave a lot of y'all slack jawed. It did me way back when.
A lot different than I thought, and a lot different than probably majority of the people that hunt turkey think. I mean, it's like a deer. You got a doe in heat, and that doe in a
spike's not dominant deer.
That's right. 12 point comes by and there's a spike behind him, and I shoot the 12 point. Well, that spike's gonna keep following that doe and breed that doe if that doe will let him. So it's not that way with turkeys.
That's a critical, critical distinction too, guys.
Yeah. Yes.
This is a question I get a lot. Turkeys are not deer.
Yeah.
Deer use a promiscuous kind of mating strategy where it's a free-for-all. Young bucks, old bucks, middle bucks, every buck, they're all chasing does. In the turkey world, their dominance hierarchies dictate breeding. That's the way that pecking orders work. They're not like deer. So thinking that, you know, you just to your point, guys, you remove this guy and that next Tom this afternoon, he's ready to go. It's just not the way it works hormonally. That's just not how they function.
And it's wild because you're talking about something that's inside that turkey that we can't see without research to know this happening. So a two-year-old comes in, or let's say, and in this case, a two-year-old's not dominant. There could be places that, you know, got leveled off last year, a two-year-old's dominant. But a non-dominant gobbler, when he comes to a call, so that response is still there, even though that turkey may possibly not have the testosterone to successfully copulate and inseminate the hen.
Yeah, because what happens in this bird is and to the previous question, this question actually relates to that, so I'll mention this. We don't really know, and I suspect it's very situation specific. So, and what I'm saying is, let's say you just have three toms and you remove the dominant bird. We don't really know what hormone levels are in those other two birds. Maybe one of those birds was pretty ramped up, and maybe he is capable of breeding quickly, whereas his partner is not. And then you go right down the road somewhere and there's a different circumstance where maybe it takes a little longer. That's something we just don't know. We just don't know that. And we'll never know that because of how many turkeys are on the landscape and all these things that are influencing this bird. But yeah, these birds are responsive to calls because, I mean, one, their testosterone levels are at least high enough where they're strutting like you're seeing right now.
Yeah.
So turkey, their testosterone levels are high enough right now where they're strutting and gobbling, but they're not in the peak of their mating season yet because the hens aren't receptive. But yeah, to your point, they'll still respond to calls and be turkeys because they're toms. I mean, that's
right.
What drives their ecology.
We're going to run to the break here, coming right back. More with Dr. Mike Chamberlain. Lots to talk about here as we talk about maybe, you know, the different things that could be affecting where we are with turkey populations. Man who's done the research. Always great to talk to him. Be right back. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Continue our conversation with Dr. Michael Chamberlain. And you opened eyes or left people slack-jawed like you did first time I stumbled into this information you're talking about the breeding, about dominant toms and then the other toms. And you said pretty candidly to us during the break there, too, that this information's been around a long time, but we weren't. And y'all in the research world weren't looking at that for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the work that I've just talked about was done in the 1970s and 80s. And in fact, the work that was done that has largely been the guiding force for setting turkey hunting seasons and how we should kind of think about harvest in the spring and fall was done back in the 1980s and has been around for decades. And a lot of the work that was conducted on other species like turkeys that act like turkeys, that behave like turkeys, was done years ago. And we kind of lulled ourselves to sleep, I think, at least in the research community. And I'll squarely say I'm at fault there as well, because we just went to sleep and we continued to ask questions that we thought were relevant to agencies. And in reality, you know, these declines were right under our noses. We had the information in front of us to see it, and it just didn't resonate. And then when it did, you know, we realized, well, hell, this has been going on for a while now. And now we need to do something about it. And I, like I told y'all in the break, you know, I look at myself and I'm embarrassed in one respect. I think, you know, Mike, you should have been thinking differently about this. I started really trying to pour through this type of thinking of mating systems and hormone levels and sexual selection and how these birds perceive each other 5-6 years ago. I mean, I'd known that stuff all of my career, but I didn't come full circle and really start thinking about what it meant. And I should have been doing that 10 years ago or 15 years ago. But again, I think we just kind of lulled ourselves into a pattern because turkeys were doing well, or at least we thought they were doing well. And we had a lot of birds and we could harvest a lot of birds and things looked great. And then, you know, suddenly a decade or so ago, us in the scientific community went, okay, guys, we may need to take a look at this. Things don't look as good as we thought they did.
And on top of this, too, that talk about the hormone levels, even with and reading research and talking with you, even that dominant tom, it's not maybe I don't word it the right way. The probability of an inseminated hen is increased with multiple copulations, right? I mean, it's not one and done always.
Yes. Yeah, that we've known as well for years. This bird is supposed to breed multiple toms with not only the same tom in some cases. Some hens we've seen through genetics research, they may only breed with one tom, but they do it multiple times. Some hens breed multiple times with different toms. So she may have two or three toms represented in her clutch. And that's the way this bird is supposed to function. They're supposed to breed multiple times because that improves fertility of the entire population. And the commercial world has known this for years. It's why they artificially inseminate their flocks regularly, not once. That's the way turkeys are supposed to function. And again, we've known this for quite some time.
Okay, so that dominant gobbler is doing the breeding, and he needs to do it multiple times. You just pointed out that we're killing them, hunting them, hopefully killing them. We're hunting them, trying to kill them during their breeding season, which is and on the other side of it, hens go to nest. Like, what's the peak of nesting, like for Alabama, southeast?
We see about, you know, it varies a little bit from year to year, but just a couple of days. If you try to kind of draw a range around it, peaks in incubation would be about April 10th to around April 16th or 17th, depending on the year. And there's a little bit of latitudinal variation, say from South Georgia or South Alabama to North. There may be a day, day and a half on average. It's not as much as we think, which is, I know people like, you're full of it. It's at least a week difference. Well, the research shows it's not. It's actually about a couple of days at most from one part of the state to the other. And so, yeah, about second, you know, April 10th, something like that, to April 16th, 17th at about the latitude of the middle part of Alabama. So, you know, maybe add a couple or subtract a couple of days on either side of that. That'd pretty much cover the entire state.
So, go ahead, Mike.
And if they don't, if let's say something tears the nest up, meets the eggs and all that, they will go back and nest again. How quick would they do that?
Yeah, some will. Not all, but some do re-nest. It's highly variable across hens. Some will start re-nesting almost immediately after they lose their first clutch. Others will wait several weeks. We've had birds even wait nearly a month before they start again. To answer your question, not all of them do it. And those that do, it's pretty variable when they start that second nest.
And I know that in July that a friend of mine spooked a hen off of a nest in July with like 10 or 12 eggs in it. So they can keep on doing it for how long?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we routinely see GPS-marked birds that initiate clutches in June and even July. It's a really small percentage of the population, and those usually are third nest attempts. We've even had birds that try it a fourth time, although that's pretty rare. So yeah, some individual hens, they'll keep trying, you know, more than just twice.
But the bulk is there in that range in April. So what I'm getting at is once we reach that peak incubation, that if we kill that Tom, then the dominant bird, then what net effect do we have on the population? Is it just minus one? I mean, he's done his duty, right?
That's the thinking, yes. Because this was pointed out to us years ago that the most conservative, biologically sound scenario for harvesting this bird would be to wait until a lot of your hens are on the nest, because at that point, some percentage of your toms, regardless of whether they're dominant or not, are expendable because most breeding has already occurred. And that has been written for decades. I'm not the one, I didn't just make that up yesterday.
Right,
I mean,
right.
That's been written by researchers and scientists for decades. And it, for the reason that it does, it makes sense. At that point, it doesn't matter which toms you shoot. As long as you don't shoot too many, who cares if they're dominant or not? Because you're removing them after breeding's occurred, or most breeding's occurred. And by the next year, they're going to sort it all out, and there'll be new dominant toms on the landscape. And then we'll just rinse and repeat the process, if that makes sense.
It does. So, I mean, I'll go wander over here and touch that third rail. So are we shooting too many toms too early in states that open, like so many in the southeast in March?
Well, it ultimately depends on your harvest rate. And what that means is, you know, what percentage of your toms are you actually removing? And I'll be honest with you guys, at broad scales, we don't understand that. You know, we study turkeys on study sites, and we can't study turkeys everywhere, so we catch as many as we can, and we band them, and we see how many are shot. And in some years, on some areas, it's pretty low, like 10%. And on other sites, in some years, it's 50-plus percent. And in some places, we've had all of our marked toms killed, like all of them.
Man.
So it just
killed by hunters or predators or everything?
No, these are just harvest.
Okay, just harvest. Okay.
Percentage of toms that are killed. The answer to your question is, it ultimately depends on what percentage you're killing. If you're killing a really small percentage, and you shot that tiny percentage well before breeding occurs, then probably who cares? All the data that we have, and not me, but all across the Southeast, the agencies that are collecting harvest rates are seeing that, for the most part, they are well over 30-40%.
Wow.
And that means that, say, a third of your toms are being killed. And we know that most harvest occurs early in a season, regardless of when it opens. So it doesn't matter whether it opens March 20th, April 10th, whenever. Most harvest occurs early, and you know, we all know that, guys. I mean, season opens, you know, everybody's getting after it, and the toms are vocal, and they're ready to go, and they haven't been pressured, and a lot of your harvest, you know, a big chunk of your harvest occurs within the first couple of weeks, and then it tails off throughout the rest of the season. So to your point, if you're opening the season super early and you're killing a lot of your population early, then that could be problematic. And again, we've known this for decades, and we're told by early researchers, hey, they want to pay attention to this and just kind of keep track of harvest rates. And unfortunately, agencies by and large just haven't done a really good job of that. But the study, the work that we have and others have in other states, shows pretty clearly that harvest in many areas is pretty high.
So this is, and we're going to go to the break here, but this is part of that. You talked about all the different things that could be done to help turkey populations. We talked about trapping. We talked about habitat. This is one of those things, right? Maybe delayed harvest.
Or at least the...
Or
at least
in the situation.
That harvest is important, yeah.
Yeah, that it does have some effect on it. All right, coming right back, more with the wild turkey doctor, Dr. Michael Chamberlain. A great discussion about turkeys, and there's so many questions. When we come back, we'll also tell you how to find him on social media. You got more questions, which I'm sure you do. You can send them his way. All right, coming right back. More about 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, and wrapping up our conversation for now, although I'm going to lean on him to come back on the show very soon, Dr. Michael Chamberlain, and talking about turkeys, of course, with the Wild Turkey Doc. All right, here in Alabama, I know this is true in the discussion in other states, but like we were getting to, this question about delayed harvest, moving, I know they experimented on some WMAs last year, but overall for the state, this idea of moving the start of turkey season later, this is pretty contentious out there. I mean, look no further than social media or just go to the feed store and bring this up, you know? So what's, in your opinion, this move here, does this help put more turkeys on the landscape?
Honestly, we don't know, but what the agency is trying to do is they recognize, and it's not just Alabama, it's every state that's considering regulations changes. What they're trying to do is use the best available science they have available in front of them, and that science has told us for decades that the timing of when you start taking toms off the landscape matters. And so what your agency is trying to do is they're trying to thread the needle, if you will. They're trying to make sure that the timing of harvest is as appropriate as they can within the constraints of ensuring hunter satisfaction. So, you know, they're trying to develop a harvest framework that allows folks to be in the woods because, quite frankly, agencies need us turkey hunters in the woods. That's the economic engine that drives agency funding. They need us out there. They want us out there. So they're trying to come up with a framework that is in the best interest of the bird and us turkey hunters. And that's why some states, Alabama included, are considering changes that would delay the removal of those toms from the landscape, because we know, we've known for years that that can be important.
Just a couple minutes left here. The different versions of this, of course, you know, to the delayed harvest, the moving back a season start date, or I've seen like South Carolina with the one tom in the first 10 days kind of thing.
Yeah, and that's states taking a different approach. You know, it's all geared towards the same end result. Let's try to minimize the percentage of the harvested population that's taken early in the season. So in other words, what South Carolina did is they said, well, you can go ahead and start hunting April 1st in most of the state, but you can only kill one tom the first, you know, 7-10 days, whatever it is. That's their way of saying, go out there and hunt and enjoy yourself, but we're going to try to limit harvest early. And then once it gets to the point where, again, like we just talked about, when the removal of toms at the right percentage no longer matters to breeding, because breeding is complete, then we'll let you complete your bag limit. That's what several, you know, agencies. Missouri did the same thing.
I know things are specific and site specific, but overall, a delayed harvest or a shortening of a lessening of a bag limit, which one has better protective element on the population?
Well, the bottom line is how much opportunity you allow us. That's what drives harvest. Bag limits are not as impactful as how long and when you allow us a field. That we've known that in the turkey and waterfowl and other worlds for many years as well. I mean, it's opportunity that drives harvest. So that's kind of what these agencies are battling, is they want us out there, they need us out there, but they also understand that opportunity drives harvest, and therefore they're kind of in this kind of dance, if you will, where they're walking the tightrope.
All right.
I know I'd rather lose a few days than to open up and kill one the first morning and then hear 4, 5, 6 more.
You couldn't stand it.
And want to go back the next day.
Make you crazy.
Yeah, I just wait. I mean, well, I don't want to get started and have to stop.
It's a tough thing.
That's my opinion.
Well, that's good. That's why we have shows like this to talk about it. And Dr. Chamberlain, please come back on with us soon and remind folks they want to find you on social media. Where do they go?
Yeah, just if you're on Facebook, just type in my name, Michael Chamberlain. If you're on Twitter or Instagram, it's at Wild Turkey Doc. It's Wild Turkey DOC, all one word, and you'll find my account. Message me. You can email me. I'm more than happy to respond to people if you have questions or concerns. You know, if you have things you want to discuss and they're contentious, I'm fine with that too. I have no problem having those discussions.
Great stuff. We look forward to our next conversation. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Mike. Good morning.